Hello and welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day Disney vacation fix. The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at KingdomStrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort and pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando stroller rentals and an authorized Walt Disney World stroller vendor. Today on the podcast, I'm talking with Eric Anderson about his end of July Alaska cruise that has been, dubbed the Cruise of Doom. Eric?
Cursed Cruise of Doom, yeah.
Cursed Cruise of Doom. Sorry, left that part out.
But yeah.
So why don't you lay some groundwork for us here? This was a Disney Cruise Line Alaska cruise, so we know you depart out of Vancouver. We kind of know that part. But kind of give us the background. You know, when did you start planning this trip, and how did it come about?
Sure. My mother-in-law was retiring at this year, and we asked her if she wanted to go on a cruise because we thought, hey, we'll take her down to the Caribbean. It'll be a good time. Get on a Disney ship, take the kids along.
Right.
It'll be fantastic. But she said, well, I don't know what I'd do on a cruise, but I've always wanted to see Alaska. So, the next step, of course, was to...
Best of both worlds.
Book an Alaskan cruise, right.
Sure.
So at that point, we had a destination. We knew what we were going to do. There's really only one itinerary, more or less, up
right.
there. We
just right.
had to pick the dates. And... my mother-in-law bought into it, and so we had this planned out pretty far in advance. We talked to a travel agent. We priced out sort of two cabins because it would be four of us and my family plus my mother-in-law.
Right, right.
And priced out two staterooms, and then we also priced out one-bedroom concierge suite.
Okay, as a comparison to the two separate rooms.
Exactly, and the concierge suite wasn't too much more, plus concierge. So
right.
that's the direction we took.
Ah, interesting. Okay, so you did decide to spend a little more on the concierge suite, and it's a two-bedroom suite, so that's a nice size room.
Well, one-bedroom suite. But,
oh, a one-bedroom suite. Okay, so not one of the Walter Roy suites, but the one-bedroom suite.
Right, and we did have room for five in there, and that's what we needed. So
right.
we did
okay.
that.
Okay, and so that's sort of a setup for this. And talk a little bit about that stateroom because I don't think many of us have experienced it.
Well, it's like I said, it's a one bedroom suite. There's the main living area, which has the pull down bed and then a fold out couch, which the stateroom attendant came and. Dealt with every evening, which was great. So we didn't have to do any of the work getting those either pulled out or put back away.
Nice.
Because they got put back away in the morning. And the bedroom is behind a door, a sliding door, but it's got its own bathroom back there. And the main area also has a bathroom and shower.
Okay, and are they both the traditional Disney split bath setup?
No, actually, they're both integrated. It's the Wonder, so they're still it's the old.
Oh, okay.
So it's just the one single room. The one in the master in the bedroom of the suite has a vanity outside of the bathroom, but otherwise you're all in kind of one room there for the bathroom.
Okay. All right. But you do have access to two bathrooms, which is nice because, that's sort of one of the trade-offs of not having two rooms, but you still, at least with the suite, get the two bathrooms.
Exactly.
And it sounds like, you know, especially when those beds are put away, you have a nice kind of open space in that living area.
Absolutely. Plus, there is the veranda. The veranda is really big. I mean, it's long at least. So you've got three doors out to it, from two from the main area and then one from the bedroom area.
Okay, so it's like a double length veranda because it runs the full length of both parts of the room.
Exactly, and that's really handy on those days when you're, you know, cruising up the fjords and or, you know, looking for whales. So that's,
right,
being out there is really nice.
Nice vantage point.
Exactly.
And those concierge staterooms are all on which deck? Do you remember? They may be scattered on a couple of decks, but on the Wonder, which deck were you on?
We were on 8, I believe.
Okay.
I think we were right next to the Walt Disney Suite, if I recall correctly.
All right. So you could smell it from there.
We could, you know, look around off the balcony and see their, you know, even more spacious balcony.
Always something that, you know, one more, right?
Exactly.
All right. So now, I think all of us are pretty familiar with the whole port arrival process at Port Canaveral, and I know you've done that. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, dealing with arrival to Vancouver, both the travel there and then the transfer to the port? Because I think it's a little different than, you know, what most of us are used to at Port Canaveral.
Sure. We flew into Vancouver actually a couple days early. We flew out of D.C., my mother-in-law flew out of Connecticut, met in Toronto, and got on the same plane from there out to Vancouver, and had a couple days out there to kind of get acclimated, deal with the time change, and got a hotel that was not directly in the port area, but not too terribly far away.
Okay.
It was no problem getting all five of us to the hotel. But apparently in downtown Vancouver, it's very hard to find a cab that will take five people.
In fact, it
was impossible. So ended up put four people in the luggage in a cab to head down to the ship. And I just hoofed it down from the hotel, which, you know, was a, you know, 10, 15 minute walk tops. But yeah, so there's something to be warned about. If you've got a larger party, you're either going to have to split up into a couple of cabs, or somebody's going to have to do it on foot.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point, because it's something you don't often think about until it's kind of too late.
No, I'm used to having sort of instant access to, you know, cabs, you know, minivan-sized cabs if you want them, but apparently it just doesn't happen.
Huh. All right. Well, that's a good warning. And so you got in early. Good. You had plenty of time. About what time are you heading into the port? Is it again similar to Port Canaveral, where you want to get there early and, you know, get on the ship so that you can, you know, start doing that sort of transition, you know, lunch, that kind of thing? Or is it a little more leisurely boarding process?
I think the boarding process is actually about the same. The cruise terminal there is huge, and it's well laid out. If you are a concierge guest, then you get escorted from, you know, sort of the arrival point all the way onto the ship, more or less.
Right.
You know, you get a special holding pen that is different from the general holding pen before you get on the ship, and you're the first people who get on the boat, so which is nice. So we just figured that, you know, we're going to take as much advantage of that as we can. So
sure.
We got there early, got on board early, and started exploring the ship, because we hadn't been on one of the older ships yet. We'd been on the Dream and the Fantasy, but not the Magic or Wonder.
Oh, okay. So yeah, so you've now got three quarters of the Grand Slam.
I'm almost there.
Okay. I'd almost forgotten about the fact that you were concierge level, because you do get a very different boarding experience. You don't really have to deal with the cattle call so much.
Exactly. And if you can do it, I highly recommend it. It's just and plus it gets you, you know, early access to a bunch of things on board the ship. So appointments, spa appointments, dining reservations at Palo, all that sort of thing. And The concierge experience was really, really nice. So you get on the boat, there's a concierge reception where they come by, the concierges come by and introduce themselves to you. They tell you that, you know, just let them know what you need. There are various, you know, sort of cocktail receptions throughout the trip for the concierge guests. And really, we saw our concierge every shore excursion. He was there to make sure that everything was okay. It's just a level of service that's even above and beyond the usual standout Disney service.
Sounds like it's sort of like, a room steward who doesn't just go away, right? He's sort of on call there.
Absolutely. And the if you, you know, call guest services from your room, from a concierge room, it rings to his cell phone. So he's fielding the calls from his concierge guests.
So there's no filter at guest services.
Exactly. So it's just, you know, hey, can we get, you know, X in our room? Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll bring it right up. And usually it was him bringing it right up. So they work hard.
Right, sure. All right. Interesting. So you board the ship and, you know, I assume you spend some time exploring a little bit. I'm interested in your impressions of the classic ship as compared to the larger Dream and Fantasy that you had been on before.
Well, it was definitely a change. There are things that I missed there. Like there's no, you know, Meridian lounge at the back of the ship, which is always one of my favorite places. But Apollo's there. It takes up the whole back of the ship, and that was nice. The rotational dining is pretty similar. I mean, there are some interesting touches there. So, and they're happy to explain the sort of the parrot. Parrot Key has some interesting features that were built into the ship when it was built in Italy. Overall, I mean, it's certainly more walkable. You can get from one end of the ship faster. But I think the Dream and the Fantasy do a good job of funneling people where they need to go. So I think that I didn't really feel a sense of loss of anything, really.
Right.
So it's I thought it was a very pleasant experience.
Okay. So yeah, so there wasn't, I always wonder if it feels a little more claustrophobic just because it's a smaller, you know, smaller ship, less sort of, empty open space. But it sounds like, you know, they just as they've done on the Dream of the Fantasy, you know, the one of the things I think Disney Cruise Line in general has done is to lay out their cruise space in a really well thought out way so that, you know, you don't feel that.
Absolutely. And there are fewer people on board the ship too.
Right,
so
right.
I think that they're, you know, if you've got, you know, X thousand versus Y thousand people, and there are some things where just everybody wants to be at certain times.
Right.
And on a bigger ship, you get even more people trying for that one thing at one time. But with fewer people, there are, of course, fewer people to go to that one thing at that one time. So,
sure.
I think it works out well.
All right. Well, let's start getting to the experience of this cruise itself, and talk maybe first of all about, you know, the ports and how those went. As you said, it's a fairly, you know, standard itinerary now for Disney Cruise Line, and frankly, a lot of cruise lines. I mean, there are a couple that sail, you know, smaller ships so that they can, you know, go a little farther up into the fjords, but for the most part, the cruise lines are sailing all pretty much the same itinerary. So you're heading out of Vancouver, and where are you headed towards? What's the first sort of destination?
The first place we go is the Tracy Arm Fjord, which is one of these very lovely fjords right off. Right off the coast there, or right on the coast there. Mm-hmm. And it has, you just kind of head up that fjord, you see some beautiful scenery out the window. or you know, off the deck of the ship, and you end at a glacier. You can see actually ice calving off the glacier, forming icebergs like right there at the end.
Oh, cool!
And it's just amazingly beautiful, and yeah, so that it's really an incredible experience.
Okay, so
it's basically a sea day, but around you, you're going up a fjord. So on either side, not too far away, you've got all this beautiful landscape, and you go by icebergs, you know, small icebergs, not Titanic sinking size icebergs. But you see these things, and like, you eventually get to their spawning ground.
Okay. So, yeah, so the I think one of the things that's really interesting about this part of this cruise is that it's one of those rare occasions on a cruise ship where you can see land either direction, right? Because you're kind of in the, well, when you're in the fjord, it's like almost being in a driving lane for a ship.
Yeah, it gets pretty tight sometimes, and I heard, audible gasps from people as we, sailed up, but... But yeah, it's a really neat experience.
Yeah, and one thing too that I always like to mention is that for people who are concerned about issues of seasickness or of how stable a boat is and that kind of thing, Alaska cruises can be really great because when you're in these kinds of areas, the water is sort of naturally calmer, because it's more contained.
Absolutely, and like I said, my mother-in-law hadn't been on a cruise before, and so we were a little concerned, but it was very smooth sailing the whole way.
Good. So anything, in particular about the fjord there that, stands out and is, worthy of mentioning?
I mean, I think the just breathtaking hallmark is seeing the Sawyer Glacier at the head of the fjord, basically. Mm-hmm. Just that it's just such great elemental beauty there that even if you're not big on scenery, I guess, it's really arresting, I think. Because it's not something you see. I mean, at least here on the East Coast, it's not something I see. So
right.
Just the whole vista there was just incredible. And I was up on deck as the ship turned, and just trying to get as much out of that experience as I could.
Right. Well, yeah. And that's one of those things that people, kind of, get a little, it's gasp inducing, right. Is seeing this huge cruise ship that you feel like is, got rocks on either side and then, it goes down to the fjord and then pivots.
Yeah, it turns on a dime. No worries.
All right. So there's your, kind of introduction to an Alaskan cruise is this vista of the fjord as you, head up that direction. And what's the next sort of, point that you're headed toward?
Well, we head way north to Skagway. That's our next, that's our first real port of call. It's the only time. That's right. The first time we can get off the ship.
Okay.
And at Skagway, we signed up to do a train trip. So there's a railroad line that runs up, actually over the Canadian border there, up a mountain, and gives you some just incredible views.
Right.
And get some history of the area. It's just a really nice, nicely laid out experience. They have the train trip that we took specifically has a thing for kids. So the kids got to go do something on the way back.
Oh, nice.
So the adults kind of had time by themselves.
Right.
Kids had time by themselves, which is how adults and kids want it. Right.
So sure.
That was an interesting part of the trip, and they had really, really good folks in there with the kids.
Yeah. Now, is that one that's organized through Disney, or is it one that they work on with a third party on?
Disney. I mean, it's one of the ones that Disney contracts out to a third party, but okay. we had Disney guides with us.
Oh, all right. Yeah, so it's interesting to me because, you know, at one time they were using basically Adventures by Disney to run a lot of their excursions in Alaska, and it seemed to me that they had pulled back from that. But it sounds like they've kind of at least maintained some of the model from when Adventures was running them.
Yeah, I think it's mostly for the kids, actually, just so that there's a, you know, Disney kids staff person right. there with the kids, just to make sure that everything is goes according to plan.
Cool. All right. You had the railway there at Skagway. Now, if I remember right, Skagway is sort of got this reputation. It's the former mining town. Is that right? Or is it still a mining town?
I don't believe it's a mining town now.
Okay.
But it is. It's not a huge place. there is. It's again just a beautiful place. It's got kind of a main street and like seven streets off the main street, basically, and just beautiful views all around. It has a beer pub there, which was recommended to us by one of the train guides.
Right, right.
Can visit that, but there's also.
Did you hit the pub and how was it?
Yeah, it was good. I tried a bunch of tried four of the beers, I guess. it was a sampler. It was a flight. It wasn't four pints, but yeah, they had this one particular one that was brewed out of spruce tips, which was. Supposedly, there was one of the native, you know, the first people's tribes up there brewed a tea out of these spruce tips to get the vitamin C.
Okay.
And somebody heard brew, and then they decided to make a beer out of it. But, you know, it was tasty. So
that was, okay. Well, it was tasty. That was the key. I was going to ask you whether, you know, somebody made a mistake hearing that.
I'm not saying it's healthy, but it wasn't a bad idea.
Okay.
So there's that. But yeah, and the others were perfectly good too. And yeah, everybody had a good meal and, I had some beer. So,
okay.
What's wrong with that?
No, it sounds like a vacation really, which is kind of the idea, right?
Yeah. And most of the rest of the town has a lot of, touristy stuff. There is, you know, plenty of places where you can buy jewelry. It surprised me how much these port towns looked like Caribbean port towns with a bunch of jewelry stores that seem to cater to the cruise crowd. But I guess that's, you know, an economic driver. So,
right. Right.
But it was still kind of like, oh, it's like Nassau, but much colder
without so much hair braiding.
Yes, that is true too.
Right. But more salmon.
Thankfully. Yes.
All right, so we've had the fjords, we've had Skagway. Where are you headed next?
Next, we go down to Juneau.
Okay, and that's more of a city port.
More of a city port, but you know, it's a city of like 30,000 people, so it's not the enormity that you think about when you think of one of the larger cities in a state. But there, we went on a more or less a nature hike up through the woods there, up to the glacier, and it was really neat because we got to see these streams where salmon were swimming upstream at that very moment. So it was entertaining and educational, and some good exercise too. It was a good hike, but. Just some beautiful scenery. We had a great guide who talked about the animals who were there or who were around there. We got to see a salmon that had been, you know, kind of ripped apart by a bear that was off to the side there. And it surprised me that, most of the salmon was still there. I figured bear gets a salmon, the salmon is, you know, gone in a couple of gulps. But
right, right.
Apparently, the bears really like sort of the brain and the eggs of the salmon, and then leave a lot of the rest. So, that surprised me. So I was edified by this by this trip.
So, it was awfully convenient of the salmon and the bear to, you know, make a nature documentary for you on your hike.
I know, it was great, and that was pretty early in the trip. And you know, a lot of hiking after that, they talked about how the glaciers had been receding over time. And they had things marked off, you know, for, you know, year X, year Y, et cetera, where the glacier had been before, and then kind of walked up to where the glacier was now, on the far side of a lake. And it was really striking to see just how much it had receded.
Cool. Okay. And so the nature hike at Juneau, and where are you headed after Juneau?
So after Juneau, the last port of call is Ketchikan, which is apparently the salmon capital of the world.
Uh-huh.
Which is nice.
I get the impression you're a bit of a salmon fan.
I am, yes. And this is a good trip for me. They definitely had a lot of salmon, sometimes jumping out of the water, sometimes just on a plate. So
so either on the plate or volunteering for such.
Exactly. So they're making their presence known in a lot of different ways. But yeah, Ketchikan was again the last stop. It's again not a big town. It's clearly catering to the tourist trade. It's apparently usually very rainy there, but we had a beautiful sunshiny day. So we had great weather the whole time. So I know that Disney does these cruises in the summer, and they can't guarantee that you're going to have nice weather, but we ended up getting a lot of very nice weather.
Excellent. Yeah, I know that can be one of the challenges because, you know, they're limited during the, you know, in the time frame that they can take these cruises, just because it's got to be warm enough to be safe to be, you know, taking a ship through the fjords. But, you know, by the same token, the downside is, as you mentioned, that sometimes it means it's kind of rainy season. So it sounds like that you managed to get sort of the best of both worlds. It was, you know, warm enough that you didn't run into ice, and you also didn't have the, you know, usual early summer rain, or I guess midsummer rain.
Yeah, and yeah, we had some rain, I think, the first day. So I was out on deck in a, you know, in a rain jacket, but that's as bad as it got, really.
Good.
Anyway, yeah, so in Ketchikan, we took a float plane ride, and that was really impressive. So just stuck the five of us in a plane with a pilot and flew up over this, you know, just vast wilderness and saw just some beautiful vistas. We landed in one of the freshwater lakes. It's up. It was carved out by glaciers long ago, and you know, sat down there. My kids saw a sea otter up there, so their trip was made. And then we flew back into Ketchikan after that, and you know, it was just. I can't say enough about the vistas, because you really have to see them. They kind of defy a good explanation, at least for me, because I don't have a good frame of reference for the sheer majesty up there.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen that myself. I haven't been up to Alaska, but it reminds me of, you know, being a guy who grew up in the Midwest, and then, you know, the first time I went and spent time in the Rockies and trying to explain, you know, what the vista looks like as you're coming down one of the Rocky Mountains and you're looking out over a valley, right? There's just sort of an extra dimension to the scenery that you don't really have the vocabulary to explain.
Yeah, and the scope of this is just immense. I mean, you know, looking at when in Juneau, when we went to see the glacier, like we know, we see the glacier, it's huge, and there's 13 miles of glacier behind it, and that's just, you know, trying to wrap your head around that is a pretty challenging thing. But
right. All right. Now, so we've talked about the, you know, ports and excursions, and it sounds like from these excursions, well, I guess I'll ask, you know, if you had to pick, what was your favorite? Because it sounds like there were probably three or four standouts there, but, you know, what was the one that was your favorite experience?
Well, I may have oversold some things. Like, for instance, for me, the train, I'm not a big fan of heights when I am I'm not in control of what I'm doing. So I'll walk right up to the edge of a mountain and look over the edge. That's fine. But if I am in a vehicle that's on the edge of something, then that increases my level of anxiety quite a bit.
Okay.
So this was my own personal waking nightmare for a good bit of the trip.
Ah, so a bit of high anxiety. So now we have a touch of the curse, huh?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. So, and of course, one of my children wanted to go outside and stand on the little platform outside the train car on the way up.
Of course.
Like, okay, I'll go out there with you. And then...
Daddy has to pretend to be brave now.
Yep, exactly. So... So that was, like I said, a little anxiety producing, but it was fine. Made it back safely. That's great. I think the time in Juneau was nice. I didn't mention we also went on a whale watch after we did the nature hike. So it was all sort of a one big excursion.
Mm-hmm.
And the whale watch was, I think, a little underwhelming just because we didn't see that many whales. Apparently, one sort of breached right behind us, but I was looking at the front. It was in the back.
And ain't that always the way, right?
I miss it. Yeah,
it was right there, really.
Cursed. But really the float plane ride was incredible. You know, just despite what I just said about heights and in vehicles that are you know, surmounting the heights, airplanes are different. It was just fantastic. It's just such an interesting way to see so much of the landscape. That was really the high point, I think.
Cool. So let's go back on the ship and talk about some of the, you know, sort of onboard activity things that are, you know, maybe not necessarily completely unique to the Wonder, but, you know, have a different flavor on the Wonder as compared to their sort of analogs on some of the other ships. So let's start with, you know, asking you to kind of look through your kids' eyes. And I'm sure you heard feedback from them. What did they think of the kids' clubs on the Wonder? And, you know, did they have a sense of them in sort of comparison to the others that they'd experienced?
They loved them. Actually, I was. They may not have had the sort of expanse that the ones on the bigger ships had, but they still had some great activities. They had great counselors. They had, you know, the same sort of, you know, dining experience down in the kids' clubs that they missed when they were on a different cruise line.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, they. They loved it. They got to meet other kids. They got to make friends there, which is always, I think, a great part of these trips is that you're often, you know, seated near similar families at dinner, or the kids meet up in the kids clubs, and yeah, they just really enjoyed it. And my older daughter, who is about to turn 11, ventured into Edge, which is the sort of, I guess, preteen, teen, early teen.
The tween club.
Yeah, exactly. Tween, that's the word. And yeah, so she was sort of a free agent for a lot of the trip. I would go down there to bring her something, and she'd be taking off up to go on deck, and like, all right, fine. I guess the days of any sort of knowing where you are over now. But yeah, we actually dispatched them with the Wave phones, and that worked out really well. So they're, you know, 8 and, like I said, almost 11, and they were able to call in and check in whenever they were going places. They can check themselves in and out of the kids' clubs at those ages.
Right.
So they were great about checking in with us when they were.
So I was going to ask you about that. You know, the wonder and the magic. You know, we're a little later to getting the whole, you know, telecommunications infrastructure that the Dream and Fantasy were built with. So have they upgraded, like, do the elements of the Disney Cruise Line app work yet there? Do you know?
Yeah, it all worked perfectly.
Oh, okay. So the chat function of the app and all of that works now too.
Yep. Tried the chat function. That worked great. I was able to, you know, peruse menus, activities, everything was right there. Just like on the other ships.
That's great to hear, because I know that there were people who were frustrated when it came out first on the Dream and Fantasy and were just wondering, you know, because I guess it was an infrastructure issue there for a little while, so they must have gotten caught up.
Yeah, I had no problems whatsoever.
Cool. Okay, so kids clubs were successful. The kids enjoyed them. That's great. And any of the onboard activities stand out during the week you were on board?
Let's see. I got a couple of massages. That was good. but yeah, the spa service was great. I did a lot of running in the gym on board. That was fine. The dining was fine. We had one dinner at Palo, and it was, you know, just as good as on the other ships. We had a brunch at Palo as well, and it ran just like on the other ships.
Okay.
So everything was done incredibly well, and yeah, I didn't notice any differences with the Apollo dining at all.
Okay.
So I think they hold up a similar level of quality.
That's good to hear. Good to hear. And I bet that, you know, the scenery there from Palo, I mean, it's always gorgeous in the Caribbean, but you can only imagine, you know, going through the fjords area and all of that you get some really stunning vistas out that window of Palo.
Yes, we were we're more out to sea. We had the land was farther away when we were in Palo. Just by happenstance,
right.
But yeah, I'm sure that with a lot closer land, then you're dealing with a whole different outlook.
Sure. Well, you know, as long as we're on the subject of food, why don't you talk a little bit about the dining on the Dream on the Wonder, and, you know, any differences that stood out to you, about those either main dining room experiences or even, you know, buffet or counter service experiences?
Well, I think the one thing that really struck me was you've got, you know, Parrot Key, which is a Caribbean-themed restaurant.
Right.
And you're in Alaska. So that was incongruous. I think the other restaurants are sort of generic enough that it doesn't really matter that much, but I just thought it was – I chuckled about it at times. But I think that the biggest difference is just the locally sourced food that's there. They've got an Alaskan theme night where they bring on, you know, crab legs and salmon and all that good stuff and roll it out for the guests. So that's always great.
Yeah, and I think that that's really one of the big sort of changes of the last few years at Disney Cruise Line, that it's one of those things where, to a certain extent, you wonder why it took them this long to figure it out, but they really, I think, got a wake-up call when they first started getting feedback from guests about, you know, food after the Dream and Fantasy were rolled out, because the big advantage that the Dream and Fantasy had was space. And it's not just that there was room for more people, there was room in the galleys for more things like produce, you know, that the Magic and Wonder just didn't have. And so over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, they've done a lot to do more sort of just-in-time supply stuff, right, for the galleys in the ship, so that, you know, every time now the Wonder or the Magic stop in a port, it's not just to let guests off and, you know, have them enjoy their excursions, but they're also resupplying the kitchens.
Yeah, I think that I'm glad we got to benefit from that.
Were there any meals that particularly stood out, either for the food or for the, you know, dining experience, which kind of Disney is famous for?
Yeah, I think it was more of a steady experience. They didn't have Pirate Night, so that was missing. They had sort of a Frozen themed night,
okay,
which was I think even my daughters are a little bit over Frozen at this point, so that didn't land with them the way it might have maybe a year ago. But they were able to find food that they liked. They were able to, our servers were great. They kind of learned what the kids wanted. You know, so my younger daughter had her drink on the table when we got there, which was, I think, made her feel very special.
Of course.
And I think it's just having sort of a smaller set of people to look after, the servers who move with you throughout the dining rotation, really focused in quickly, I think, on guests' particular, you know, wants and really what they prefer.
Sure, so. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. It's one of the benefits of the classic ships is that with fewer guests to look after, you know, there's a better chance for those servers to really get to know individual guest preferences.
Exactly. And, yeah, I think in terms of the food, yeah, I mean, the sort of, you know, Taste of Alaska night, I think was a big hit just because my kids love crab legs and I love salmon. So that was good for the whole family.
All right. And so any other sort of onboard recreation stuff that you checked out or anything else that, you know, your family, experienced that, stood out, bears mentioning, something to watch out for or make sure that you don't miss?
Let's see.
Well, I guess maybe before I get into broad overview, summation stuff, one thing we haven't talked about is the onboard entertainment. And, you got a 7-night cruise. What are they doing with those 7 evenings? What did you think of the evening entertainment on board?
I did not see any of the shows. I caught a movie or two.
Okay.
On the boat, but a lot of it was, the kids were just off in the kids' clubs, and they just loved that so much that they really didn't want to go see a show. They didn't want
right.
to do anything but, either, in the case of my younger daughter, play with her friends in the Oceaneer's lab, and in the case of my older daughter, run amok all over the ship. So that was really what they were keyed into on this, and I think they really enjoyed the independence, and letting them kind of run with that was great. And I didn't feel particularly compelled to hit any of the shows, but like I said, saw a couple movies and hit the there's a piano bar which I also frequented.
Okay. Okay.
Which was very nice. So, they do have that sort of, adult entertainment area, just like the other ships do. It's a little smaller, but it's still got some good draws there.
Okay, good, good. So glad to hear that the piano bar was enjoyable. I mean, it seems to me that the piano bars tend to be blessings or curses, right? I mean, it's all dependent on how good the person who's at that piano is. So
they had a couple of people cycle through, and not much repeating of things. So like you didn't hear the same jokes over and over again. You didn't hear even the same songs necessarily over and over again. But you know, it had a wide repertoire and it was pretty sparsely attended. So, you know, there's plenty of room in there. You could, you know, sit as close or as far away as you wanted.
Right, right.
And just have it as background noise, or, you know, they sometimes did, you know, sort of question and answer things about songs and quizzes, but so you could go down and participate in that if you wanted to, too.
Okay, okay.
And people would bring you alcohol, so that was also a bonus.
Yes, it is. All right. So I guess then we circle back to some of the, you know, summary, look back, favorite things, what, you know, looking back are going to be the things that you remember about this cruise.
Yeah, I think just the scenery up there was just so incredible. I mean, it has nothing to do with the ship itself. It doesn't have anything to do with the itinerary, really. But just everything that we saw was just so incredible and so different from what I'm used to that, yeah, it just blew me away. It was really incredible. So just having the chance to go up there and see those things was a fantastic experience.
All right. All right. All right. So,
sorry. In terms of the cruise being cursed, however,
yes.
While we were out, we found out that our cat had died.
Oh my!
At home, so that was, you know, led to the you know, cursed cruise of doom.
Right. Right.
But you know, it was one of those things where we were just trying to. You know, frantically text with people who were taking care of the cats back home and trying to, you know, find out what was happening, and texting with the doctor. And so, you know, we ran up, you know, some internet bills, but, but yeah, but that's one of the things we'll remember. We had to kind of keep that under our hats too, for the kids' sake until we got back
home. Right.
Cause they would have noticed when we got home and there was a cat missing, but, we also didn't want them to have to deal with that on the cruise. So that, that kind of threw a wrench into things, but there was enough there to distract from that bad news.
Right. Right.
That we were able to pull through and just kind of keep moving, keep the vacation going
right.
until we got back home.
Yeah. There's I would swear there's a whole, like, you know, TV or movie plot that comes out of, you know, somebody who is house sitting and the cat dies while they're house sitting. But
yeah, I
can't place it at the moment and probably not humorous to you right now.
Yeah. I felt bad for the guy who was here taking care of the cats, but yeah, it was some bad news.
Yeah, sure. All right. So I guess the, you know, big thing would be then, What did you learn from this trip that you would pass on to people who are considering the Disney Cruise Line Alaska cruise? You know, what kinds of things should people know that they don't already?
I think that much more than the Caribbean cruises, the shore excursions are incredibly important because you've got a lot of choices to make about what exactly you want to see, because we passed up things like riding a dog sled. That's
right.
That's one of the things where how often are you going to get that opportunity? Unless, you know, maybe you live in Alaska to begin with. it's not going to happen that often. Or, you know, maybe in Wisconsin. I don't know. But the chance to do that versus, say, the chance to do a whale watch. I mean, you're really torn between choices. So I think it pays to look at the experiences, and sometimes you'll get the same sorts of experiences in two different places. Like you could do a float plane ride in Juneau, or you could do it in Ketchikan. But then there are other options that you may only be able to experience at one port or the other. So it really pays, I think, to read through all of those shore excursions and target the ones that you really want to do, knowing that unless you're doing Alaskan cruises every year, you may not have the opportunity to do this
right.
Perhaps ever again. And, you know, aside from that, it's not a Caribbean cruise. It's
it's not 80 degrees and sunny, huh?
It's not warm. And so, you know, packing for it involves a lot of layers. So luckily I've got like 12 million long sleeve tech shirts from different Disney races that I just, you know, threw in a bag and use as a base layer. And then because we had such nice weather, that's pretty much all I wore. But the weather was great, and I didn't have to bundle up too much. But it was definitely not shorts and t-shirt weather every day.
Right. Which, you know, for some people at the end of July, beginning of August is a good thing. It's something they look forward to, but it does take a different kind of preparation than, you know, just grabbing your other summer clothes and heading to the Caribbean.
Exactly.
All right. Well, that's an important tip. And I guess, you know, your overview of the concierge level experience is that it's a thumbs up. It's something that, you know, if the circumstances are right, it's worth the investment.
Yeah, I think especially if you've got a situation like ours where you've got five people and it's either two staterooms or a five-person suite, then, you know, weigh the benefits of the concierge level. You get bathrobes in your room. That's awesome. but even so, I mean, you get the kind of personal attention that is even above and beyond the usual level of Disney service.
Sure.
So I think that goes a long way. You get, like I said, you know, cocktail receptions almost every night. And they'll buy you drinks. So that's also handy. You get to, spread out a little bit if you got one of the suites.
And it sounds like for Alaska in particular, you know, just that, you know, supersized veranda is
exactly.
A really nice bonus.
Exactly. I was going to say, it's also, you know, my mother-in-law is, I mean, I don't want you to get the idea that she's decrepit or anything, but, you know, she's also not interested in being around crowds. So if you've got a bunch of people up on deck trying to, you know, look at whales or something, or just look at the glacier, it's much better for her. It was much better for her just to be able to go out on the veranda and see everything out right there,
right,
without having to jostle with the crowds.
All right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. So I guess, I always like to wrap up by asking whether there's anything important that, you know, I should know about, but I haven't asked about.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that the real take home from this is that it's not about the boat. I feel like on
sure.
Caribbean sailings, it's about the boat because you're at sea a lot. You're going to islands where a lot of the shore excursions are the same or similar.
Right.
You can, you know, swim with dolphins in two or three different places on a Western Caribbean cruise, or you're getting off at Castaway Key for a day and you're doing basically ship stuff, but on land, because you've got all your meals are taken care of there, everything. But on this cruise, I think it was so much about getting off the boat and seeing what each of these ports had to offer.
Sure. All right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Well, thank you so much, Eric, for coming and talking about the cruise with us and teaching us a little about, the current Disney Cruise Line Alaska cruise.
Sure. Happy to do it, Aaron. Thanks very much for having me on.
One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation, right at the start of everything that's new. One little spark lights up for you. So glad you could come along. I am the Dreamfinder. Musical notes, what delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas, anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. And you never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Two tiny wings, eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer.